Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Greta Anderson.
Hello, Susan, and hello to you, our listeners. Glad to be with you on Wednesday. What do we have in store today?
Well, since this is Wednesday, and that's County Day at KHOI, we are introducing a new feature, which is a county report from Leanne Harter, Outreach Coordinator for Story County. Is that right, Leanne? Am I introducing you correctly?
That's pretty darn good, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're so glad that you could come on and be with us today. So what have we news from the county?
Well, I have a bunch of updates and just special events to share with you all. And I just want to start by thanking KHOI for letting me come over and do this on a monthly basis because it helps us get the message out on what the county's doing. And for anyone interested in any of the county's programs or events, I encourage them to go to our website, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov, and there's a Notify Me tab that they can sign up for and receive notices for meetings, special events, all the good things. So it's a great opportunity to stay involved.
Yes.
Well, spring is approaching. I say that kind of reluctantly, waking up to snowy drive over here this morning, but we do have spring approaching, and with that, the Planning and Development Department would like to remind everyone, if you are planning on building a building that's 100 square feet or larger, so maybe a little bit larger than some utility sheds, or even fence or anything like that, you need to get a building permit or a zoning permit. So it's important to keep that in mind and build that into your planning process so that when you get to the time that you're ready to start digging, you can do it within the regulations. So check our website again or talk to the Planning and Development Department at 382-7245.
Okay.
Another very, very exciting thing happening at Story County is the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. It's the park space at the Iowa State Research Park that Story County has been talking about with the Conservation Board and planning for several years now, and we're actually just calling it the Tedesco Park. It's named after former Ames Mayor Ted Tedesco, longtime conservation champion here in Story County and definitely a promoter of this project. It's a 37-acre piece of ground that we're right in the phase of doing a master plan to show how it will be developed. We had two open houses January 31st, and if you go to our county's website, you can see the proposed master plan, and we're at the time we want public comment back. So go to the website and look at that. It's going to be a wonderful showpiece for Story County to address water quality, how you can restore back to native habitat, and it's right in the midst of a very large commercial development. So it's a very unique type of development.
Well, I have to say, I live very close to the first roundabout up there, and this is the second roundabout I see,
yep.
And I was so excited to see what those plans are. That'll be a wonderful addition to South Ames.
And did you attend the open house?
No, I just found out about it actually in the newspaper.
Well, and it was great coverage, but I'm going to suggest, like, you weren't able to. I actually wasn't able to attend the open house. You can see the presentation that was given at the open houses on our website. So you can see the master plan. You can see the thought process that's gone on thus far in the planning and what the future holds.
Well, we'll probably have that up on our website.
I can definitely send a link to it.
Thank you.
I also, we're at the point in time every year that the county solicits input on our capital improvements plan. We have a very robust capital improvements plan, or CIP, and we have it out for public comment right now. We're taking public comment through the end of the month, and then March 14th, the Board of Supervisors, kind of hand-in-hand when they adopt their budget, they'll be looking at the CIP as well. It sets our blueprint for our infrastructure and development over the next 5 years. Projects like the Research Park, the Tedesco Park are included, bridge improvements, other purchases that we need to do countywide. So it definitely is our roadmap for how we go forth in addition to our comprehensive plan.
Well, that's, and incidentally, since we have listeners from other counties, this is the Story County plan.
Yes, this is the Story County plan. But that's a great point. We are starting to look a little bit beyond our boundaries, from the infrastructure investment standpoint, from our watersheds. We have right now a request for proposals, so RFP, that we're asking for potential consultants to come work and help Story County look at all of our smaller HUC 12 watersheds. HUC 12 is a way you label a watershed within Story County and do some assessments and planning for those. Well, that watershed boundary doesn't neatly fall right at the county boundary. That raindrop, when it falls, doesn't say, oh, I'm in Boone County, I'm in Story County, I need to go this way and help one or the other. So as we get these more developed and more defined, we'll be reaching out and definitely working with our surrounding counties and really trying to address water quality and water quantity in a very holistic approach.
Oh, well, that's a good development, I think.
Yeah, it's a great project. I'm really excited about it. We had a meeting with potential vendors a couple weeks ago. We had amazing turnout and the consultant pool. Obviously, consultants are pretty interested in it, but the consultants we had there, I was very impressed with all of them. And then kind of related to that, but in a different way, we have the Board of Supervisors has sent out invitations to all the jurisdictions, and that includes the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, the Board of Supervisors, City Councils, within the Kigley Branch Watershed. So the Kigley Branch Watershed goes from North Ames all the way up into the city of Randall, up north in the headwaters of the Skunk River. What we're hoping to do is follow the path we took to develop the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority and do that with the Kigley Branch Watershed. So another opportunity to address water quality and again, look beyond our county borders. So great process in play.
And do we consider the people downstream from us? I've heard it said that we those floods that we get, we may also contribute to.
Yep. I think you're 100% right, and that is part of the impetus for looking at these smaller HUC 12 watersheds and seeing how we can plan accordingly so that what's happening upstream is negated when it goes downstream, or at least lessens the potential impact downstream. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, and it's not, we're not going to have the answers immediately and the solutions immediately, but we're taking the lead and starting to look at it and really highlight what concerns and fundamental issues need to be addressed.
Sounds like a good development.
It's very exciting. I'm very proud to be part of it, too. Then the county attorney's office, you know, under our new guidance of Jessica Reynolds, recently appointed county attorney, she is partnering with the Ames Schools and teaming up to start an interdisciplinary team approach to combat truancy. There's a higher truancy rate in the city of in the Ames School District. And so this is a way that they plan to, before formal mediation occurs, with a family, meet with the families and school districts, reduce court involvement, and really get the kids in school during the day where they should be.
Well, that I would think would be a pretty big problem in some cases.
It is. And I was in a meeting with the superintendents last fall, and it is starting to be a concern for many of our county school districts, our school districts in our county, I should say. And this is a great first step the county attorney's office taken with the Ames School District. And then the county attorney also wanted me to share that they have applied for a federal restorative justice grant, and that is to help obtain dollars to start the first drug court system in Story County. For listeners out there that have not read about drug courts, you can Google drug court, and there's some pretty amazing solutions out there that can help to address what really is an epidemic throughout the United States. And this is a great solution that if they're successful, they can bring to Story County.
A drug court, that sounds punitive, but I gather that it's supposed to be a remedial.
I don't know if I'm saying agreeing to the right terminology, because I'm no means a lawyer and understand the terminology they use, but it is more an approach that's less just yes, no, you're guilty, you go to jail. It's more of a collaborative approach to solving the drug crime that's been committed. I've been doing some reading on it, and it's pretty fascinating, and there's a lot of success that comes from it.
So something like a jail diversion program.
Yeah, very similar. Mm-hmm. Yep, thank you. That's a good way to kind of make that connection.
Right. So it sounds like Jessica Reynolds is interested in issues of restorative justice.
Yep,
those alternatives to the punitive system.
And I think even some of her staff, you see that through her staff too, and the involvement they're now gaining in local groups too. And it is a very good approach that they're taking. One other thing I do want to share is Central Iowa Community Services. That is our regional mental health region, our mental health region. They now have a Facebook page. And Carla Webb, who is our community services director, wanted me to share that because it is a way to really get the message out there that individuals can find out there's help available. And, you know, we all are also social media driven these days. The Facebook page is facebook.com/CICS Central Iowa, all together, CICS Central Iowa. And the more people that can see that will be able to benefit from the services. So with that, we have upcoming events. Board of Supervisors every Tuesday at 10 a.m. And we try to get those up on our YouTube page as a rebroadcast within 1 or 2 days. I apologize right now because I'm the one that does that, and I'm having a lot of technical difficulties. So I don't even know if I'll have yesterday's meeting up today yet. Hopefully maybe tomorrow. But for those of you that want to see what happened, you can go back a couple days later and watch the meeting. Or you can go ahead and listen to the audio, too. That's usually up within a couple hours. So lots of opportunities to find out information and to get involved.
Well, thank you.
You are more than welcome.
And so is there anything that we've forgotten to talk about?
Yes, there is.
Yes.
Yes. I would just like to remind everyone that we always have openings for citizens to be involved in local government. And I'm going to speak on behalf of Story County because we have many, many boards and commissions, everywhere from the Board of Health to the Conservation Board to Planning and Zoning. But even that, we need volunteers in our communities too, not specifically for Story County government. So those listeners that have always had that little tug to get involved in local government and they've never really known how to begin, reach out to your elected officials and say, hey, is there an opportunity for me to volunteer and what can I do? And if you specifically are interested in Story County government, get a hold of me, and I can get you the application.
Well, thank you. And I have seen a little from reading the Boone News Republican that they also have a similar request.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a commonality but among all governments.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, and have a great morning.
Well, you too. If you've just tuned in, we're saying goodbye to Leanne Harter, who gave us the Story County Report. And thank you for letting us know how much is happening in our county. Now, we'll see you again next month. Now, we'll turn to a meeting in Story City last Saturday with Representative Dave Dio talking about legislative issues to his constituents. They incidentally met in the coffee room behind the Story City Greater Chamber Connection. So the audio reflects that, but I think they were talking about important issues. And here's his response to a question from Chris Riemann.
I have not seen the details, so I probably shouldn't tell you what my position is because I really haven't seen the bill and I don't know exactly what it does. I'd say in just my general philosophy is that if you have somebody here who's an illegal immigrant who's committed a crime I think they should be held and they should be sent, you know, sent back to where they came from. But I mean, we're talking about people that have committed a crime, or they're or felons or that sort of thing. If it's a situation where local law enforcement has to go out and start actively doing the job of ICE and looking for people, and I don't agree with that, but that's just sort of my general thought on it. I don't know what's in the bill, so.
Part of it, and it's the same language we've repeated many times, but counties, municipalities, and state agencies are prohibited from doing anything less than the full extent requested by federal immigration law. Now, request has been going on for a long time without the funding. This is an unfunded mandate. It also seems to run against local control, which is something that Republicans feel strongly about. Mm-hmm. And it seems basically to say it's coming down on municipalities that have basically been restating the law as it exists, which is restating the separation of responsibilities. And this is considered by some lawmakers to be sanctuary, really. There's nothing to do with sanctuary. But it seems all too familiar in terms of the rhetoric we hear nationally. These people, I'm sure your neighbors know, are an important part of our agricultural economy. Mm-hmm. They're hardworking. They pay between $60 and $70 million in state taxes every year, according to a 10-year-old estimate, and about the same amount in federal income tax and Social Security tax, which they get nothing out of. They're members of our community. Their kids are going to our schools. We go to church with them. Mm-hmm. Let's think like neighbors here.
I agree 100% with that, especially if they're here as legal immigrants. I think we should encourage that. I like the idea of bringing in people that, you know, with talents and things from other countries. I think that's great.
Well, the reality is, that's what this question is exactly about.
Right.
But they're not criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they had a tail light out or something. It all depends on what we define as a criminal misdemeanor,
right.
A felony misdemeanor,
right.
Which I have the feeling that in order to get the quota that's been stated, we're going to have to modify a lot of regulations so that people look like criminals, and they're not.
So I guess my question was, with the language you read me, I'd have a question of what that means, you know, that they have to cooperate to the fullest amount or whatever
that's
was.
That's the crux of it.
That would be my question, I guess, for the folks that run the bill is, you know, how that would actually impact people.
They were discussing House Study Bill number 67, which, as Dave Dio said, it was difficult understand what the meaning of this was from the wording, but it was over and over again that, as you heard, that the county officials were being asked, the sheriff's office and police were being asked to do the work of ICE, and basically our county sheriff, and as you will probably hear others, have said, this is not our business, this is not our work. We want our citizens to feel safe to come to us with their concerns and not to be afraid of us. And this is going to be a pretty big topic for the rest of the program. And I wanted to give a sort of a last-minute report that I got last night, that in the hearing, when the legislature was discussing this, there was a large demonstration. 75 people came into the hearing room and disrupted it, and in spite of that protest, the bill passed out of the House Public Safety Committee on a party-line vote with 12 Republicans in favor and 9 Democrats opposed. It now goes on to the House.
Opponents of the bill are calling it the You're Not Welcome Here bill.
Yes.
To indicate the connotations that someone who is not here legally is not welcome despite their contributions to our greater community.
Yes. Now, not here legally. Actually, at later in the program, we'll be talking to an immigration lawyer, and she gave me a little breakdown on the different categories of the different status categories. And everyone knows about citizenship, which many people may not understand where it comes from. If you are born in the United States, no matter who your parents are, you are a citizen. Now, there's some talk about trying to change that so that the children of undocumented people are not citizens. Now, I don't know where that's going to wind up, but there's some very punitive things coming down from the federal government, including, well, I'll talk about those later when we get to the lawyer.
Okay. Sounds interesting. I can't wait to hear. And in fact, there was an article in the newspaper yesterday. I noticed Austin Harrington in the Ames Tribune had an article about interviewing Jessica Reynolds, who we were just hearing about from
yes.
Leanne Harder, our county attorney, discussing this issue of whether Story County would be enforcing immigration laws and whether we were a sanctuary county. And the answer to both questions was kind of no. We're not a sanctuary county, but we're not going to be enforcing immigration laws as a priority here.
When I talked with the immigration lawyer, who's Joanne Barton here in Ames, she gave me quite a lot of material to read, and this is an opinion from the United States Conference of Mayors from January 25th, 2017. Quote, local police departments work hard to build and preserve trust with all of the communities they serve, including immigrant communities. Immigrants residing in our cities must be able to trust the police and all city government. There is also the sense that an unfunded mandate using local police and sheriffs to do the work of immigration agents would sap resources needed for fighting crime. So, with this as background, I wanted to go back to Webster City, which is a hub for two immigrant communities. In the 1970s, when refugees from the Vietnam War, Thai Dom people and others who were then in Laotian refugee camps, were seeking shelter, Republican Governor Robert Ray offered to accept 130,000 refugees from Southeast Asia. Many of them settled in Webster City, or maybe perhaps they drifted there because one of their leaders and his family were in Webster City. And Webster City is still home to the second largest group of these people, Laotian refugees, and their descendants in Iowa. Because of the agriculture-related industries there, they also have the fifth largest Latino population. Those who heard KHOI's program on immigrants last May, when we went to Webster City, will probably remember the All Cultures Equal Center. This is what their director, Janet Turing, said during that program.
On 2nd Street, which is our main street through town, in an informal survey, we counted 16 places that are owned or managed or hire a significant number of employees that are from other countries. And right across the street from us, we have Webster City Custom Meats and Marianne Specialty Meats. And just between those two places, you know, we have about 300 immigrant people. So working at that. And Prestige is supposed to bring a plant up by Eagle Grove, which isn't very far from us. And that's supposed to bring more people. And so when I have community conversations, I can't talk about politics and stuff. But I said, you know, if you want to do something to help, we have 1,600 people here that work or live here, the 1,600 people in your county, you be careful who you vote for. Because if they're gone and they can't work for you anymore, the economic well-being of this county is going to go, and this state is just going to plummet. You can't have anything on your plate that hasn't been touched by an immigrant person.
When you say here, you mean only in Hamilton County or in the whole country?
On the whole country.
Well, I thought that was a pretty dramatic statement, and that, of course, as you can tell, was before the election.
I guess people weren't that careful when they cast their vote.
Well, actually, what instigated that question was when I drove up to the center, which has flags of many countries out in front of it. Right next door, there was a very large lot with a house on it that had two large Trump signs. So we figured that there were differences of opinion being expressed in Webster City. With the change in the national atmosphere since last May, I wanted to return to Webster City to find out what was happening there now. When I called Janet Turing at the All Cultures Equals Center, I found her swamped in trying to help people get their visas renewed or deal with being undocumented. And perhaps this is the place to read this, the different statuses.
Special thanks to Joanne Barton, immigration lawyer, for providing me with the framework for these various statuses. First, of course, is citizen. There are several ways that a person receives citizenship at birth, and that is a requirement to be president. Anyone who is born on U.S. soil or has at least one parent who is an American citizen is an American citizen.
And this is people who were born here and people who were born in U.S. Territories or dependencies. For example, the Canal Zone was under U.S. jurisdiction when John McCain was born there. And anyone born on a military base, obviously, would be also under U.S. jurisdiction. And anyone who has one parent who's an American citizen. Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz was born in Canada, but his mother was an American citizen, so he is an American citizen.
Ironically, Barack Obama, whose citizenship was questioned, though he was born in the state of Hawaii, would have been a citizen no matter where he was born because his mother was an American citizen born in Kansas. There is another way to become a full citizen with all the rights of citizenship except the presidency. That is naturalization, which requires passing a written examination in basic civics, knowledge of American government such as the separation of powers with checks and balances between the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. Naturalized citizens are also required to have competence in the English language. The great advantage of naturalization over permanent residency is that if you are a citizen, you cannot be deported. And the permanent residence cards, which are often called green cards, must be renewed every 10 years. And if they are not renewed every 10 years, it's not like your driver's license. You can't say, oh, my green card expired. They are voided and you have to leave. Now, I'm not sure what the details are of that. This is one of the reasons you have immigration lawyers. There may be conditions where if you didn't renew your residency, you are not deported. But this is, of course, one of the really tricky areas right now for people who have permanent residency. But if they have committed a crime, they can be deported. So these people are in jeopardy. And then there are the non-permanent residents, the temporary residents, who are such as students who have J visas or workers who have unique skills that can't be duplicated by American citizens. And currently, a lot of these are high-tech workers, and they have H-1B visas. And then there are seasonal workers with H-1A visas, and there probably are some more. But these were the categories that Joanne Barton outlined for me. I have repeated them in my own words because her answers were much longer and more technical. She was being very careful to be absolutely precise and legally correct. If any of these are familiar with your situation, I urge you to go to a paralegal who works for a nonprofit, or to a immigration lawyer. Don't go online. Even for information, watch out. Only things that are .gov are reliable. There are a lot of scams out there, a lot of people who want to make money out of the desperation of people who have visa problems.
Susan, I just wanted to correct something that was said earlier in the program. You mentioned that Governor Robert Ray offered to accept 130,000 refugees from Southeast Asia, from Laos. 130,000 was the number that arrived in the United States. And Iowa accepted more than its share, certainly, of those refugees, but not all 130,000. That would add a percentage point to our population.
Well, actually, what I read about him did say that he accepted a very, very large group. It was more than any other state.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
he took
sure leader
for our size, and he took leadership on the issue.
Yes,
I pulled something up here, a dissertation on the topic, and Robert Ray was one of three members of the National Governors Association Task Force on Refugees.
Okay.
In 1975.
Yes,
and this was part of his work. So,
okay,
but not 130,000. I think that would bust us at the seams here in Iowa.
Okay. Well, thank you for the correction.
It just did not sound right.
Okay. Well, that's what happens when you go to the awards. Actually, it was an award. What a wonderful humanitarian he was. But he helped with resettling 130,000, even if they didn't all come to Iowa.
Right.
Okay. So we've gotten through the citizens, immigrants, non-migrants, and the visa overstays are probably also being now called illegal, because you have to leave when your visa says, if you've got a two-year visa, you have to leave then or work and to get a renewal, and often that's pretty difficult. And then the undocumented, and that's what they are calling illegal. And undocumented means that they don't have any paperwork. And yes, this is going to be a really hard time for them right now. But I did want to tell a little bit about what's happening at All Cultures Equal now, because people do have... I can take a little time for fun out there, too. It's a cultural center, as it sounds like it would be. And Legacy Learning, which you probably have heard about on KHOI, has a couple of cooking classes out there in March. But the deadline to sign up for a discount is February, February 17th and February 20th are the deadlines. The first one is traditional Lao cooking, which will be on March 11th. And the second is a Mexican cooking class, Cooking South of the Border, and that's March 17th, but you get your discount if you sign up by February 20th. Since Hamilton County is the fifth in Hispanic population out of the 99 counties, immigration is a big issue there. This is KHOI Community Radio, in case you just tuned in. And we have been visiting Webster City and talking with Janet Turing. And our next guest is Suemi Cayas Rios Sosa. Suemi Cayas Rios Sosa, president of ACE, All Cultures Equal, who will give us the immigrant perspective.
My cousin works at the bank, and she told me about a job opening in IT here, so that's why I moved to Webster City. That was about 3 years ago.
Where did you live before you came to Webster City?
I lived in Hampton for about 2 years. And before that, I lived in Storm Lake for about 4 years because I went to school there. And then before that, I lived in Lakeview, Iowa, which is by Sac City.
So you've really done a tour of the small towns in Iowa.
Yes.
You said you had a cousin who worked at the bank in...
Yes.
Yes.
A personal banker here.
And so what are you doing in Webster City?
I am currently the network administrator for First State Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also part of the Parks and Recs Committee, and I am the president of ACE.
You're the president of ACE.
What is that?
What?
What is ACE?
Yes.
ACE Community Center, it's a community center where anyone that's part of the communities we serve can come in and ask any kind of question, like, where do I get electricity from, or
yes,
can you help me fill out my immigration papers?
Thank you. I think she meant, what did the ACE stand for? It's All Cultures Equal.
I've heard of All Cultures Equal on local talk.
Yes, that's right. And we just mentioned the classes that are there. And I guess it really is a cultural center, but also education, isn't that right? You have language classes?
Yes, we have language classes, cooking classes, like you mentioned. Yeah.
Yes, and I think the language classes are actually put on by the local community college. So there are lots of interactions there And so you have worked there for a couple of years. And how did you find out about the threats from the government?
I found out through my mom. I don't watch TV, so I usually behind stuff, but my mom's pretty good about letting me know, hey, this is happening. She texts me or calls me, and so that has been my main source. Of course, after that, I look it up, you know, and through Janet, too, through ACE, the paralegal.
But
they also.
Are most of the immigrants in Webster City aware of this, and are some of them frightened?
Yes, but it's not like, you know, they get together and talk about it. It's more like it's like a hush-hush type of thing, you know. I've heard of it through my aunt owns a Mexican store. So also, you know, people tell her stuff or ask her questions. They feel comfortable with her, but and sometimes some people come to ACE too and do the same. But it's not like, you know, everyone gets together and if you're afraid, you get together and like, hey, these are the problems. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and I believe that ACE is a center for with paralegals to help people with the documentation. Now, you mentioned when we talked on the phone the kinds of things that people are specifically concerned about when they come. What are some of those?
Well, the first one is their kids. People are concerned that if, for some reason, they get stopped by the police and get deported, that they won't, you know, what's going to happen to their kids, who's going to pick them up from school. And then the other one is their houses. If some people have houses and they're worried, you know, or cars, what's going to happen to the cars, payments, who will the government pick them up, or who's going to sell them, all that legal stuff. So I think those have been the two biggest concerns that I've heard.
So are many of the workers in Webster City undocumented?
I don't think so, but I don't know that for sure, you know. You know, it's kind of complicated.
Of course, and that's one of the things that I found with this whole program. It's extraordinarily complicated. You'll hear from the immigration lawyer just how complicated that is. The other thing that I've read that they're doing is they are trying to develop something called Better Together. Were you at the meeting, the Better Together meeting?
Yep, we're actually having one tonight, too.
Okay, well, can you describe what the purpose of this organization is?
Yeah, the purpose of the organization is to bring the community together in hard issues like this one. You know, how do we move forward? The city manager was there with the police chief and the sheriff, and they were there to answer questions that we had regarding, you know, if I get pulled over, what happens, type of thing. And they walked us through, you know, the reason why you would get pulled over is not just, you know, because the color of your skin, there's a reason why, and things like that. So they're trying to work with us to help us understand what the rules and regulations of the city are, so we have a better understanding of that, and also tell us that, you know, they're not here to just pick on us because our skin's a different color.
Well, and do you feel people are reassured?
With the people in charge, the sheriff, the police chief, and the city manager, I feel like, you know, they're they're getting more comfortable. They, you know, then these people just started in the new position, so it's not going to be overnight. But I feel like, you know, definitely that's a step forward to the right direction.
So, well, thank you. Is there anything that, now that you're on the air, that you would like people to know?
Yeah, there's quite a few things, but I'll just say that, you know, communities work together better economically when everyone works together. Everybody, you know, benefits from each other. And sometimes people look different, but that's okay. That's what makes it all work. Some, you know, bring different assets to the table, and that's how it should be.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
And that was Suemi Calles Rios Sosa, the president of All Cultures Equal in Webster City. And for those of you who are just tuning in, this is KHOI, local talk, and we have been in this hour. The beginning of the program, we heard a county report from Leanne Harder in Nevada. And today, we are talking to people in Webster City, have been talking to people in Webster City about immigration. Now I think we have a time for a brief clip from the immigration lawyer who gave me the information that I talked about earlier. Yes.
My name is Joanne Barton. I'm an immigration lawyer, and my firm is Barton Law Immigration Lawyers here in Ames. I practice with another excellent immigration lawyer, Megan Lance, and our website is immigrationiowa.com.
And I think our listeners would appreciate just the basics on what immigration law is about. I think many of us think that there are people who entered legally, and most of us may not understand what undocumented even means. So could you give a little rundown? Are there sort of categories? These people, you know, walked across the border and have no papers. These people have visas that have expired.
So I think the first distinction I'd like to make is that most people don't understand the difference between citizenship versus someone that's a citizen versus someone that isn't a citizen. They assume that anyone who has documents to be here is a citizen, when in reality, citizenship is dictated by our Constitution as well as statutorily. And when people come to visit me, oftentimes they'll say, well, my case is just like my brother's case. But it's not. Every case is like a fingerprint, because every detail about that person is different. The manner of entry, the year they entered, you know, did they go through an airport? Did they go through a truck crossing? What country are they from? Who are their family members? Have they ever been stopped by the police or by immigration authorities? All of these, plus the change, the statutory changes over time, make it so that each case, each person has a different case. So that has to be analyzed and looked at separately. So if that explains it to you.
Yeah, it does. And it's it explains also why it's so difficult to do the legal thing.
Correct. It is difficult to do it the right way. And sometimes it's so overwhelming for people, they just give up. Or they say, well, I'd rather just pay somebody to bring me in, because it's cheaper and easier than trying to do it the right way. Or I have no route. There is nothing available to me. So what am I, you know, so they become desperate and either don't do anything, or they get taken. Every time they go meet with an immigration advocate, such as a paralegal or a lawyer, they don't know, am I getting good advice? Am I doing the right thing?
Is there a reason why it is so complicated?
The reason is because immigration policy changes.
And why does it change so fast?
Well, Congress, something will happen, and then Congress says, okay, we need to change immigration law again. And so the statute is constantly in flux. There are always tweaks being made to the immigration statutes. The regulations are being changed from time to time as well, and the regulations are promulgated by the executive branch. And so and the regulations are what are the create the structure of how to follow the statute that Congress has passed. And so as a country, we have different ideas on how immigration policy should go, and people have very strong feelings about it. So that's why you see so many changes.
That is a reduction of about an hour talk, and one of the things that Joanne Barton was very helpful with was she gave me many written materials, which we'll put some of them on online for you. Her firm has a monthly immigration newsletter with some of the latest changes, because as she says, they change all the time. They change really weekly. One of the things that she didn't have time to discuss on tape was the exorbitant cost of changing your visas. And she covers that and just what they are and what different things cost. For example, the application. These are the applications for, say, a family and spouse. Application has increased by $115. Residency renewal has increased by $80. And an entrepreneurial petition, now I don't know what that is, but I think it's amazing that that would be something. And this is $2,175. So it costs an immigrant more to start a business with all the other paperwork being okay than a citizen. And a certificate of citizenship costs $570, and I think that's after you've gone through naturalization. So it's becoming very, very it may always have been somewhat expensive, but for people who are working in the kinds of businesses that that Janet Turing described, the costs are just enormous for them. They could be several thousand dollars to bring in a whole family. So there's a lot to know, and we certainly don't have time with our program today to tell you any more. We'll put up what we can on the website, and but stay tuned. It's an important issue that everybody needs to know about. I'd like to just close out with a couple of announcements that we really should be letting our listeners know in this area. You've heard about the food classes at All Cultures Equal with Legacy Learning. They're also having other classes in February on welding. And art welding. And those look quite interesting. And so just go to the Legacy Learning website and check them out. And I was asked also to mention the Slater Area Historical Association is very pleased that they have just added a large addition to Heritage Hall, and they're having a tour of that today. At 1:45 this afternoon, after their meeting at 1, and the public is invited. That's today. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Greta Anderson, and voices you heard were Leanne Harter, Outreach Coordinator for Story County, Representative Dave Dio, Rick Exner, Janet Turing, Suami Calas Riososa, and Joanne Barton, and we're starting just a minute or so early into our outro, so we'll go through that and then we'll play a song about immigration that Greta has found. So, Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Greta Anderson. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music, what will it be?
Called Ice El Hielo by La Santa Cecilia. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Ice, water frozen solid. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE, El Hielo.
Iba pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está cuidando que todo brille como una perla. Cuando llegue la patrona, que no se vuelva a quejar. No sea cosa que la acuse de ilegal. José atiende los jardines, parecen de Disneyland. Maneja una troca vieja sin la licencia. No importa si fue taxista allá en su tierra natal, eso no cuenta para el tío Sam. El hielo anda suelto por esas calles, nunca se sabe cuándo nos va a tocar. Marta llegó de niña y sueña con estudiar, pero se le hace difícil sin los papeles. Se quedan con los laureles los que nacieron acá, pero ella nunca deja de estudiar. se sabe cuándo nos va a tocar. Lloran los niños, lloran a la salida. Lloran al ver que no llegará mamá. Uno se queda aquí, otro se queda allá. Pasa por salir a trabajar. Uno se queda aquí, otro se queda allá. Eso pasa por salir a trabajar.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.